Hi everybody, and welcome back to the Performance Path Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Porrick, and this is episode number 64. Folks, in today's episode, I got a chance to talk to the excellent Kieran Kyo. I hope you guys enjoy the show, and I'll chat to you very soon.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Coach Porrick. It was the Humble Coach Podcast, so you're now very welcome to the Performance Path Podcast. I'm not sure whether to call this episode one or episode 64, but we'll go with a bit of both. But you're all welcome back to the show, folks. Today I have a fantastic coach along with me for a chat. His name is Kieran Kyo. Kieran, thanks for joining me, man.
No problem. Good to be here.
So, Kieran, you have, I suppose we kind of know each other a little bit offline. Not a huge amount, mind, but. I know you would have, I suppose, quite a significant level of experience in a number of different areas when it comes to S&C, when it comes to coaching, when it comes to academia to an extent with your lecturing experience. Could you though give us a little bit of a background on kind of, I suppose, how you got into coaching in general, and maybe even why you got into coaching, or would you consider yourself a coach at the moment, or are you? How would you kind of work it?
Yeah, I suppose I'd consider myself a coach at the moment. So, at the moment, the lecturing is not something that I'm doing a whole pile of. Obviously, I had been doing it kind of full time for a couple of years, but I actually gave that a little bit of a break to actually try and do a bit more coaching and be a bit more involved in coaching. But we might get onto that transition kind of later, I suppose. Yeah. But in getting into coaching, I suppose maybe the same as lots of us. I know as a young fella in school, I suppose the biggest interest I had was sport. So and it wasn't until I think I was actually kind of repeating the leaving that I realized there was actually an avenue that was anything kind of sport related or fitness related or anything else like that. Like, you know, so. When I was repeating the leaving, I remember seeing a course down in Tralee RTC, as it was at the time. Like, you know, it was like health, fitness and leisure studies, and it had these job prospects as being like a fitness coach or a fitness trainer, or working in sports performance, which, look, you know, I had no idea that even this kind of industry kind of existed, like, you know. So I signed up for that, like, and I suppose, like most of us, I would have been into absolutely every sport going as a kid. You know, when if the Tour de France was on, I was out on the bike. If Wimbledon was on, exactly. you're digging out the tennis racket, and then yeah. It was hurling finals and whatever. Like, I just used to love like watching sports. Sport was always a big thing in our house. Like, it was always on the TV. So, and then look, I went and did that. I went and did that course. It was a degree down there. And funnily enough, I didn't finish it first time around. I got to the maybe about 3 weeks out from the end of the degree, and I just left. So that might be an interesting segue later on as well.
we'll note that.
And then I suppose, like most of us, just working in gyms, working in leisure centers, enjoyed that. Obviously, like, it's good fun, but probably like most of us, it was very kind of regimented or by the book. Like, you know, you're just doling out the same kind of programs to everyone kind of willy-nilly. And, you know, I suppose I wasn't really kind of enjoying that. I knew I wanted to be involved in maybe more of a, you know, is it personal training or is it more kind of sports teams and stuff? I always had the interest in sports. So I was obviously more kind of geared towards that and working with maybe kind of athletes or whatever it was. Like, you know, most of us, like, you know, we're interested in that dream of working with athletes and teams and all the rest of it. Like, you know, so I think it was about maybe 2005 or six. I remember seeing a course advertised up in University of Ulster up in Jordanstown. It was just like a weekend strength and conditioning workshop, basically. But it was organized by two guys that were both Australians. One of them was a guy called Phil Moreland. Is it Phil Moreland or is it another? I'm not sure the name. His surname is definitely Moreland anyway. I'll have to kind of check that. But he was the S&C coach with the Australian Institute of Sport for a good period of time. And I think he came over to Sports Institute of Northern Ireland. And they ran this kind of weekend workshop. And I think initially they were trying to have it as a prelude to that Australia Strength and Conditioning Association Level 1.
Yes.
Now, that never really got off the ground in terms of running it up in Belfast. But I remember I went up that weekend. There was another guy there, Dave Lassini, another Australian S&C coach. And look, I remember doing that kind of workshop, and it was very different to the usual kind of fitness stuff that I had done. Like, you know, so like even from doing my degree in college, we never really, I don't think we ever did anything like kind of program design or anything like that. Like it would have been very basic. And I remember covering the Olympic lifts in college, and the lecturer that we had gave us maybe 5 or 6 pages of a printout of the clean, the snatch, the clean and jerk. And he gave that to us on the way into the gym, and he said, you go in there and practice them type stuff. Like, you know, so there would have been different, I suppose, kind of different levels of kind of people looking after us back down there as well. Like, you know, but now I had some really good kind of lectures as well. I had a guy, Pat Flanagan. So he was really interesting, really motivational kind of guy, really passionate about kind of fitness and training. And he was a former sprinter, and, you know, he would have covered a lot of the performance type aspects with us. Like, you know, so he was excellent down there. And then I suppose from doing that kind of course up in Belfast, it just maybe opened my eyes up to, I suppose, kind of strength and conditioning, and gave me just a bit more of an awareness and a bit more depth in terms of what good training was. Like, you know, so at that time I was probably, well, there's no probably about it. Like, people would come in, I was working in a gym, they'd sit down, they'd have their 10-minute warm up on the bike or the treadmill. You know, they'd do the circuit of the machines, maybe free weights if they're interested, which most people weren't. And and then they were out the door. And then, you know, 12 weeks later, you wonder why they're not coming back or why they're not getting results. And I was always curious. I was trying to kind of figure out better ways of doing things and stuff. But I suppose certainly back then in Ireland, your gym settings weren't the best for developing people's fitness or anything else that. No. Like, you know, it was very... Well, it was very run of the mill and very formulaic, and everybody got pretty much the same variation, 4 sets of 10 to 12 and all the rest of it. Like, so so from doing that course, I ended up getting a job actually. I'd left one gym job. I actually ended up coming working back in the aquatic center up in Blanchardstown. I initially had started off in the sales office there because I had no job for a while. So I'd seen that. I took a gamble on that. And I was in the sales office for about kind of 6 months. And I was like, oh, Jesus, I do not like this. Like, this is just not me. Like, so particularly back then, like, I wouldn't have been like dealing with, funny enough, like dealing with people or kind of talking to strangers wouldn't have been something I would have been kind of hugely kind of comfortable with. And especially doing that kind of sales pitch type thing, it was, you know, it was really alien to me. So I ended up, a position became available up in the gym. I went for that. I got that. And then I did that course up in Belfast just before I moved up to the gym. And then I suppose, like most of us, there was probably a little bit of kind of chance and circumstance. I ended up chatting to a guy called Dave Malone, who was a Paralympic swimmer. He was based in the aquatic center as a head coach of the local team. So it was like the NAC swim team. So they would have had, they were only starting off, they would have kids from 6 up to 18, you know, swimming club, all the rest of it. So he was a Paralympic athlete. I didn't know it at the time. He was like a double leg amputee. He had already won like a Paralympic gold medal and silver medals and all this sort of stuff. So we ended up having a chat one day over coffee. We had some of the same interests. We followed the same sports team. We were both kind of sports fans, so it wasn't too many of us around. So we ended up just kind of having a chat. He was still swimming. got talking about what I was interested in. He says, you know, he had never done any kind of structured S&C as part of his training. It just wasn't something that was particularly popular back then. He was like, oh, will you do a program for me? So I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. So started working with Dave, and then from there he came up to me one day and he said, look, we had this guy in the swim team. He's really talented. He wants to go to the States on a scholarship. Will you do a program for him? Will you work for him or whatever? Like, so yeah. We started working with this guy, and he used to pop up to me in the gym when I was on, and we'd do a couple of sessions, and it kind of led from there. He ended up winning like a national title. He got a scholarship to the States, and off he went. So, and then from then, I think I ended up working with, Dave wanted to work with the team that little bit more. So we started off doing like an hour with the swim team, and yeah, that grew into 2 hours, 3 hours, and then up to maybe 5 or 6 hours by the time I finished up. Like, so we ended up with a nice kind of mix. We had like a little kind of development squad. We used to do kind of fundamental kind of movement type stuff down on the pool deck. You know, we had the medicine balls out, tennis balls. We had them doing all sorts of games and activities and all the rest of it. And then I was also kind of working with the more senior kind of swimmers as well. So there was a nice little blend there in that setup, from your basics, your fundamentals, mm-hmm, into these guys that were kind of 15, 16, 17 that wanted to be competitive swimmers and wanted to win and all the rest of it. So, yeah, and really it kicked on from there. So I suppose that was the start of the kind of the coaching, the start of the whole kind of S&C kind of coaching. Cool. And then it rolled on from there.
Not too bad. So, and that's quite an interesting start, I suppose, mainly because that exposure to somewhat of an alternate type of a sport or a type of activities, be it with, yeah, Paralympians or even with swimming to an extent, like I was only listening to, I think you might have been saying, listen to a webinar lately about tennis, and like just the kind of variation, I suppose, in exposure to S&C for a lot of these sports or some of these sports. Like it's very common in GA or in soccer or whatever it is, or in I suppose in the gym setting, that's S&C looks great and it's like it looks very, very common and commonplace, whereas within a lot of these other sports wouldn't necessarily be. Nowadays might be a lot more commonplace, but back in the day it was fairly newish kind of stuff. Was there any particular, I suppose, early influences in you with your coaching wise or anything like that? Like, I suppose I have a few characters from back in the day that I know definitely impacted my direction coaching wise, or at least my ideology coaching wise. Is there any particular characters that you had back in the day?
Yeah, well, I suppose this is one of the things that's maybe kind of really different from, you know, and that was maybe kind of 2005 and six, which is, I suppose, 15 years ago now, 16 years ago. But I suppose there was very little in terms of even the term strength and conditioning. That was a new kind of term. It wasn't, you know, look, it was familiar, popular in the States and stuff, but over here it wasn't really known.
Very
Wasn't any kind of S&C jobs or anything else like that. I remember even applying for a job. It was actually with Munster Rugby. It might have been about 2004 and 2005. Now, look, I had no hope of getting it. I had zero qualifications. Like, but I threw the CV in anyway. But I think it was advertised as like fitness trainer or something like that. Like, yeah, you know, so even the terminology, it wasn't as widespread as what it is now. So, in terms of kind of influences, I suppose what really drove the S&C thing was, I this might sound a little bit biased now, but I signed up to do a certificate with Setanta College. Certificate, I think they had it in health fitness. Oh, no, it wasn't health and fitness, it was physical fitness and conditioning or something. So it was like a 2-year certificate. I think that was their first branch out into the kind of educational market. And I remember this looked really interesting. It was all kind of sports based or aimed at kind of strength and conditioning. So I signed up to do that. I went down to the first workshop and I met Liam Hennessy, and I would have known Liam's name a little bit because I would have done a bit of athletics when I was kind of younger. But like that, I remember he got me to demonstrate something like a squat or whatever it was, like, and you know, just his like the amount of things that he could pick up, his knowledge, his enthusiasm. He was like such a nice, friendly guy. He knew so much. I was like, I remember being kind of bamboozled by him. I was like, Jesus, like this is really, really kind of interesting and really kind of piqued my interest. And then another thing one of the following workshops we had Des Ryan, who you probably would have chatted to a little bit and social media and stuff like so. He had us for like a resistance training module, and I remember I was demonstrating a squat, or we were supposed to be demonstrating a squat in pairs or threes or whatever it was, like so I was squatting away and Des came over, and I remember thinking in my head going, like, this is going to be great, like he's going to say, oh yes, well done, that's a really good back squat there. And in a very polite way, he kind of tore the back squat asunder. He was like, well, look at his lower back there, and look at his knees, and look at his heels, and look at this and this and this. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, so there was a whole other realm of kind of technique and everything else that I wasn't really kind of familiar with or aware of. Like, so certainly kind of Des and Liam initially were really ones that I suppose just kind of highlighted how little I kind of knew at the time. So you're kind of transitioning from that very generic run-of-the-mill kind of program into trying to get a little bit more depth, a little bit more insight into what you're doing. So, and I suppose at that time as well, there wasn't many other kind of coaches around. Like, it's not like now where you have your WhatsApp groups and everything else, and you can browse on social media and you can see so many S&C coaches all around the country, all around the world. Like, so it was a very kind of limited environment at the time. So, and actually enrolling on that course put me in contact with lots of good kind of practitioners and different kind of coaches. Like, so I think Kevin Geary was on that kind of module. I think he might have came in and gave a little bit of a demonstration one day. There was people like kind of Dave Moriarty, who was at a big kind of GA kind of coaching career, and Mick Dempsey was on it. Like, there was lots and lots of different kind of people, like, that would have had a lot more kind of experience and skills than me. Like, so it was kind of great to meet and chat with all these kind of different people. And I think if I was to look back on anything, one of the biggest kind of drawbacks I would say would be the fact that I didn't have enough maybe kind of exposure or enough meeting with other coaches. Like, so it's so much easier to do now. There's so many people that you can randomly send a message to somebody and say, look, do you mind me asking about such and such a thing? And more often than not, they'll get back to you. But I suppose kind of back then, it wasn't, the industry as such didn't really kind of exist. So there wasn't that much opportunity to get kind of role models or get advice off people even.
Yeah, I think that's a big one, really. Like, those characters that you mentioned there would be very, very high profile, I suppose, back in the day, and even now very much. But like at the time, they would have been similar kind of names that I would have recognized within the S&C kind of circles, if you know what I mean. And coming from a gym background myself, and not necessarily going mad into it, but like that kind of, I suppose it's always funny whenever you look at the States, you look at Australia or something like that, you look at some of the development, maybe a couple of, we always used to kind of say, like, the States is always a couple of years ahead of us. We'd always kind of drag a few bits. And if you were looking at the States, you're looking at Australia and like that, you'd find a few bits and you'd be like, okay, we'll bring them in here. And then a year later, you're like, okay, well, we were doing that the other day, actually. That's interesting. How, and we weren't doing it right, obviously, but we were doing it some kind of way. So that's quite interesting. But, and I suppose that's the next kind of segue. There's a couple of ways we can actually play that. So one of the challenges, obviously, is the exposure to that many coaches is great, but then applying that kind of stuff to a particular sport. So we'd say when you did that kind of course, and then coming out of that broadens your mentality completely. And then going back to going to the swimming or something like that, or the Paralympics, you're like, oh, okay, well, okay, what, how do I see the, how I'm going to apply some of these principles now? But like, you're going to naturally have kind of some funny looks going here and there with some of the stuff you're applying and some of the level of detail you're going into, because obviously within the sports, and I'm sure it's the same very much now, you have a lot more educated athletes in general, but at the time, and even over the years, it takes a good bit of time to develop that relationship and that level of awareness within between, among athletes, of exactly what you're trying to do, you know, because they might be a little bit more nervous about some of the kind of activities that you would have been going with.
Yeah, I mean, like, in so when I had that chat with Dave Malone, and he was like, oh, will you do me up a bit of a program? I was like, yeah, look, kind of absolutely. And then, of course, I would have done, I suppose you would have tried to do a bit of a needs analysis. So back then you would have been on Googling and looking at YouTube and stuff. And I remember buying a book from the States, and it was like S&C for swimming or whatever. And the book arrived in the post, and I was really excited. And I remember opening up the book, and it was just like these ridiculously long circuits, you know. Yeah. It was just a continuation of what we'd been doing in the gym, you know. Giving out general population programs, everything was 4 or 5 sets of 15. There seemed to be about 20 exercises in each kind of circuit, and I was going, oh, well, this isn't really kind of tying up with what I'm kind of learning about, you know, whether developing max strength or speed or power and all the rest of it, like, you know. So there was a lot of kind of trial and error, a lot of kind of digging around, trying to kind of figure out, and a lot of even kind of uncertainty. Like the athlete that I ended up kind of working with, who was trying to get a scholarship, he was like a 1500 meter swimmer, and I was doing kind of max strength work with him at different phases. And I remember even at the time looking at him going, oh my God, am I doing the right thing here?
Yeah.
Like, because even if, I remember at the time, if you went researching S&C for swimming, endurance swimmers, 1500 meter swimmers, like you would have got 101 TeraBand exercises. Oh, yeah. And do 15 and 20 reps and all the rest. But like, there was no strength, there was no power, there was no nothing, like, you know. So it always was at the start a little bit of a gamble in terms of, mm-hmm. God, am I doing the right thing here? And similarly with the whole kind of Paralympic aspect, I mean, there was very little information out there, like, so it was very much kind of trial and error and figuring things out and kind of saying, well, I think this is going to give me good kind of payback for what we want to get for this athlete. I think this will make him stronger. I think this will protect this side injury wise and all the rest. But, like, you know, and mm-hmm. you're kind of figuring out as you go along. And even in terms of, like, if we look at kind of swimming now, even in this country, like the S&C side is now right up there. Like, you know, they're mm-hmm. really, really, really good.
Yeah.
I can remember, I won't mention any names, but I can remember working on the pool side and having, now the person isn't there anymore, but the high performance swim coach openly laughing at what I was doing with the kids. Like, because I had the agility ladders out on the pool side, I had the medicine balls, they were jumping, they were crawling, they were doing all this sort of stuff, like, because my understanding was, well, this is basic movement stuff that they'll be able to transfer into whatever sport they go into. And at 8, 9, 10, you have no idea if he's yeah. or she is going to be a champion swimmer or a lacrosse player or hurling or hockey or Xbox or whatever it is, like, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. You know, sort of, and even like the idea of a dynamic warm-up. I remember doing that with some of the senior kind of club athletes, like the teenagers, and doing a dynamic warm-up and doing, you know, kind of stabilization and mobility exercises on the pool side, and, you know, actually, like, being openly kind of ridiculed yeah. by some other coaches. and because, you know, before that, your swim warm-up was you tied the TeraBand to the pole and you did 5 sets of 25 shoulder external rotations, and you swung your arms around a little bit and you got in. Like, there was no yeah. there was no hip mobility, there was no kind of, you know, stabilizing the scapula or trying to prepare them that little bit kind of better, like, you know. So there has been that kind of big kind of change, which is good. It's great to see. But certainly for me at the start, there was a lot of kind of flying blind, and you're like that, you're trying to apply these principles but you're not quite sure. And then every now and again you get like a little win, you get a little yeah. bit of progress, and you'd say, oh, okay, yeah, that gives me a little bit of faith now in what I'm doing, like, I think I'm on the right lines. Now, look, of course you're gonna make mistakes and you do things wrong along the way. That's no problem. I think that's probably a constant no matter what we're doing, yeah. like, you know. But
but that's a good point. I suppose there's a couple of things in there. The one thing, obviously, and this goes a little bit of a different direction, but is the, and this is talked about a lot, obviously, with the kind of younger age groups, is the volume of participation allows an awful lot of the ability to find those kind of champions as it is, but and
Yeah.
it's maintaining the involvement is a huge consideration. And I think having kind of worked with some of the kids' classes in the gym that I would have been in the last few years, it's keeping them involved in general, in all, and keeping them interested and having a bit of fun with it. And also, obviously, there's huge amounts of potential and ways that you can implement
Yeah.
really kind of fun, interesting stuff for them. You can put a huge amount of like little mini S&C bits and pieces in as you need. Like
Yeah.
we can kind of I suppose make them up to look like this kind of mad fun game, and you're like, oh,
Yeah.
it's actually just good quality landing
Play.
mechanics, and you know what I mean? There's all kinds of fun stuff. But that's a huge difference, I think, and that's where I suppose like so obviously the cool camps and stuff like that now explodes, and these other types of activities, because they drive such good participation levels
Yeah.
that over time, if the coaching education is good enough quality, then you're going to have a lot more potential for these athletes and people to do quite well in whatever sport they go with. Because obviously, that's another one that there's I'm sure some of those kids that you were dealing with in the swimming at that kind of younger age group, they may have moved on to other sports and done quite well in those other sports rather than only swimming, mainly because they would have had a bit of exposure to that. It would have kind of triggered a few things in their head, gone, okay, do you know what? It's actually okay. I kind of like soccer and stuff, or I like a bit of football
Yeah.
or whatever. So it would have kept them in the game long enough to allow them to change that particular game if they needed to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I suppose that was the plan, and like the like working with that kind of swim club was, that was a real, like what I got out of that in terms of kind of experience was invaluable. Like I remember we used to have a Saturday morning group, and I think it was like 9 o'clock. We would have had like the 8, 9, 10 year olds, or 8 and 9, I think maybe, we used to come up to the gym. We were lucky enough in that the NAC let us use the they had like a studio, an aerobic studio, like, so we had a little bit of open space that we could bring the kids in there. And I remember maybe the first 3 or 4 sessions where I would have had probably 15, 20 kind of kids running around the place. Oh, geez, Padraig, I thought I was going to have a heart attack, like, because
It's
I, oh man, and I had it in my head, like, this is going to be really organized. We're going to do a few minutes of this, then we're going to transition to this, and I'm going to teach them how to do this. And then of course, it was just like kind of chaos. But like, I realized after a couple of sessions that, look, okay, this approach is not working. So the bandwidth of what is acceptable behavior has now stretched out a little bit, and
Very
it
much.
became, well, look, as long as they're not kind of killing themselves, I'm gonna let a lot of it kind of slide. And then look, I would have had a kind of hurley in there. They would have been kind of dribble around cones with the soccer ball. They would have been doing any sort of fun activity. And then what I ended up doing, because we had like an hour, we were booked in for an hour, and an hour is quite long with that kind of age group
Oh
to keep
yeah.
them busy and keep them occupied. Like, so
Sorry.
purely by kind of chance, one of the kids came up to me one Saturday, like at about, say, a quarter to 10, and he was like, oh, can we make up our own kind of circuit or activity or whatever? And I was like, don't you know what, sure, go ahead, like, and they started pulling out these rebounders, and they had this like amazing kind of circuit kind of devised themselves. And I remember kind of looking around after a few minutes, and everyone in the group was doing something. So that became So then the last 10 minutes of every session was, do you know what, you can do what you
Bananas.
want, like, so I'm just kind of leave them off, like, but even like, it's a good point about the kind of cool camps, and like so many other sports now are up to speed in terms of giving that wide variety of basics to kids, like, that hopefully will let them kind of transition into different sports. And it's not just, I suppose, it's not that, what's the word, like, it's not that kind of high performance approach. It's not that kind of sport only, and you have to be really, really kind of good at this, like, and like I would have seen a lot of that in swimming when I was involved with it a couple of years ago. Like, I remember even being in a discussion with kind of swim coaches, and there was this kind of young girl. I think she was maybe kind of 14 or something like that, and she was a really, really, really kind of talented swimmer. And I think she'd won the national championships or whatever, and she'd gone to some international competition, and she'd swum quite well, and maybe kind of picked up a medal there. And the coaches were kind of like, oh, we need to increase her mileage to this and this amount and that amount. And I was kind of looking at it going, well, do you really need to double this individual's kind of mileage. Like, I mean, if what you're doing is successful now, you know, is there more avenue to develop or kind of technique and slowly kind of progress and kind of build things up, like, you know. So and I think they ended up, I think with that girl, they ended up absolutely kind of ramping up the mileage, and I think she dropped out maybe about 3 years later. Like, I don't know the specifics, but I imagine she was just absolutely kind of burnt out, like, you know. So it's a bit like you probably would have seen yourself in either Gaelic or rugby.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, this is what the Mayo lads are doing. Oh, well, I'm going to get my under 10s to do this now because, you know, whatever, or some kind of variation of it, like, you know, or we're going to do what the top teams do, rather than kind of looking at the athletes that you have in front of you and seeing how can you give them something that's going to bring them on just a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I'm sure even we had on that group that we were on, you would have seen possibly the article with Stephen Casey. That was in the, I think it was in the Cork Echo.
Yeah. I was reading that last night. Yeah, really good.
And like someone like him now, it's a really good way approach because, like you said, and maybe this is more towards obviously an adult team or teams, but allowing it to be quite player led, but also very, very flexible depending on where they're at, skill wise, fitness wise, the whole lot, obviously with the whole COVID situation, like being quite flexible with them. And obviously working off some base principles. Okay, well, the game is the game and you have to kind of work off through that. And obviously the small, medium, large side of games, et cetera. But there's a huge amount of scope. And I suppose we would have both now obviously been experienced to that level of chaos and having to react to that level of chaos on a quite a regular basis. I tell a silly story sometimes about my own experience in coaching. And so I suppose my first kind of coaching experience would have been when in boxing. So my parents and our kind of local club was where I started. Myself and my brothers would have kind of really started. And I think it was about 16, 17, I was kind of starting to help out in the club. I was kind of like, leaving off my career or my boxing career, if that makes sense. And then I was just like, I'm getting a bit tired of getting my ass handed to me by serious operators. And then I was kind of let in front, like my dad came over and he was like, look, there's a load of young kids here that need help. And it was about 20 of them, I'd say. It was early enough in the season. It was like a September. And all of the kind of new kids were coming in and the new parents and stuff like this. So I had to kind of entertain them for about half an hour, 20 minutes or so. And just got them through the basics. All right, get your hands up here, da-da-da. And in time, the parents are all like, and so then across the other side of the gym, the sparring is going on. So there's like 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds kind of leathering the bits out of each other. And the parents are like, this is great, isn't it great? And I'm like, every so often I kind of thought about it. And I'm like, I'm trying to teach these kids how to hit each other. And the parents are loving it. I'm like, this is just a bit weird. So I'm like, I'm having to try and keep it somewhat interesting as well and doing these kind of mad little burpees and stuff. And it was just different times. But over the last number of years, obviously, you still get exposed to that level of chaos on a very regular basis. Obviously within your kind of scope, if you're working quite a high level, you don't have as much potentially of that, but it's surprising enough that some of those kind of teams or some of those individuals wouldn't have a huge background experience wise S&C or anything like that. And they can make huge progress once they actually get some even base access to the knowledge that we would have and you would have S&C wise.
Yeah, like, I suppose like there's always maybe a kind of mismatch between maybe the level that the athlete is competing at and maybe their own kind of capabilities kind of physically or whatever, like, you know. Yeah. So and I always give the example of kind of GAA where you have the really, really kind of talented minor player who maybe has done no S&C whatsoever, but is an absolute, you know, skill fest in what they do. They get brought up to the kind of senior team and they're automatically just, you know, not often and it happens less and less now, but they're just kind of the program that everyone else is doing. It's just imposed on them. And look, of course they can't handle it. Like, you know, so I think, and maybe that's maybe kind of one thing where we might kind of still see people kind of falling down in terms of kind of team setups is maybe the, you know, it's still a bit of a blanket approach to everyone. Like, so like the individualization thing in teams can be a little bit of a myth. Like you're not going to be able to kind of individualize for kind of 35 kind of players, but certainly there is those kind of five or six where you can just kind of tweak things ever so slightly and it can have a big impact on them kind of going forward.
Yeah, so I suppose we'll kind of go in that direction for a bit. And so you would have quite a bit of experience with various teams, I suppose, and even kind of various levels of teams, like you talked about minors into kind of seniors and inter-county and stuff. That's obviously an area that can be improved somewhat. Do you think it's possible to improve that individualization within those kind of teams, or is it still a very hard battle to do that, and you need to do it find a different way of improving those individuals within that setting rather than just pure individualization?
I think you could probably do it easy enough, like, you know, so I suppose most people are going to be working off some variation of the same program. So it may be just a little bit of a kind of tweak and maybe kind of modifying either the load or the exercise for a couple of individuals, like, and maybe bringing them on at a little bit of a slower pace, like, you know. So, and this was always one thing that, even kind of going back years ago, if you're reading kind of textbooks, and, you know, they would have been even in that NSVA kind of essentials of strength and conditioning, I remember reading something about, you know, the program has to be tailored and made individual, like, you know, but they never went into how you make it kind of individual. Yeah. Like, you know, so and sometimes I suppose in kind of a team setting, it can be easy to get caught up with what's going on with the group. You're kind of focusing on maybe the kind of bigger picture, or you're kind of looking at things in terms of the collective, and maybe you can miss out on a player that's kind of slipping through the gaps or whatever. Like, so the more that you know your athlete or your player, the more you'll kind of understand about them, and the more avenue you'll have to kind of tweak and kind of change their programs. Like, you know, because look, realistically, if you're working with a GA team, you're not going to be able to have 35 individual kind of programs. Well, yeah. unless they're paying you an awful lot of money and you can dedicate 8 hours a day to it or whatever. Like, so you're probably going to have them in, you know, little kind of silos or little kind of groups or whatever. So these three or four guys are maybe still a little bit more kind of developmental. So they have a slightly different kind of workload to the to the rest. Likewise, maybe with your older player, also maybe have, so sometimes the older player's workload can begin to veer back towards what the developmental player's workload might look like, you know, just to kind of keep them, you know, you're trying to keep them ticking over. You're not worried about improving his 1RM trap bar or squat or even his counter movement jump. You just want to keep him. You want to keep him moving, keep him mobile, keep him happy, and let him play, like, so.
And do you think there's that's obviously, I suppose, quite a common theme throughout, be it all kind of levels. I suppose definitely a club, and but I hasten to say it, but kind of weaker counties type of a setup, nearly, if that makes sense. Especially in a club kind of scenario, you will have definitely some developmental players, you'll have some quite senior players, and then you'll have your kind of mixed bag in the middle. And that's the same for ladies football, for Camogie, for the whole lot. I suppose what are we getting right with those kind of teams? Is it just the, like, you touched on a little bit there, is it with the growth of a backroom team to enable, I suppose, a bit more conversation, or a little bit more at least clarity of exactly how to individualize? But it's more just that support structure for all of those players, so that you don't lose a couple of the developmental players, or that the senior players get kind of left off to do their own thing completely. You know what I mean? They don't feel like they're getting taken care of. And it's funny, I suppose, even looking at some of the inter-county kind of Twitter stuff lately, that you'll see all these large backroom teams and all this kind of crack. And you're like, well, yeah, but that's a different kind of a ball game. And even still, when you dig into it, there's two or three analysts, or there's such and such this. And like, that's kind of standard enough for a lot of larger county teams or anything like that. So, but that's quite challenging to do with a small kind of club or anything like that. But I think even listening to people like Denise Martin and stuff like that before, and like, there's loads of ways of getting somewhat kind of part-time analyst in if you need to, and you know, building a better structure in your club and stuff like that to help out all of that. I suppose it takes the village to it as an extent.
I think if you have that little bit of a kind of pathway, so and look, we might kind of see this a lot of kind of social media. I think somebody put up something in that WhatsApp group there recently of a base level of kind of exercises, and can the athlete become competent at these? Then do they move on to the next level, onto the next layer, and so on? Like so something like that would definitely make it more manageable for clubs. So we could say that, okay, well, this is our broad kind of whatever it is, kind of strength template, movement template for the next kind of 6 or 8 weeks. And you're either going to be in category one, you're either going to pick A, B, and C based on what you're doing. Like, so that might mean that you'll end up with an exercise library of maybe kind of 20, 25 potentially different exercises on any given day. And hopefully people are going to pick them, or you as the coach going to say, well, you know what, Padraig, I don't think you're quite ready for level A, B, or C. Let's stick with this one for another couple of weeks. We're going to work on whatever the issue is, get a bit more control here, there, and all the rest of it, and then you can transition up onto the next kind of level. So, so that's something that probably can certainly be done at a club level. But the individualization, it can be a little bit kind of tricky. You're going to expect it more as you get up to those kind of higher levels. Because I suppose that comes hand in hand. We probably do see that there's still lots of kind of generic stuff and you know, as even for me now, so I'm kind of working with a hurling team. Like, so yes, we will have our main kind of program, and usually out of convenience, it'll be put up and everybody gets it. And then I'm following up on the 6, 7, or 8 lads saying, well, you know, on this exercise, you don't do this. You do something else. You're going to do it kind of slightly different. We may have 4 or 5 guys that are working off their own little kind of program or whatever. So,
and so that's going to be a good shout to go to the current kind of times that we're in, I suppose. And I'm sure you've been asked by a lot of the athletes that you would work with as it is, or you're in the middle of it, essentially the whole, I kind of mentioned it in the notes, and I said it kind of half jokingly, but it's almost like a perpetual kind of off season the last kind of year and a half maybe or so, and mainly because you have to, I suppose, as S&T's coaches, you're constantly just being mindful of the loading, either up or down, or the somewhat unpredictability of it, and especially even when it comes to like normal kind of championship type stuff, be it in club or in county, it's cutthroat enough as it is. Nearly year on year, the last few years, because the goalposts keep moving, pardon the pun, but like, how are you navigating that at the moment? Or how do you, where do you see that we as coaches can help kind of navigate that over the next kind of maybe even 6 months odd, maybe kind of year? Because there's going to be one thing that's going to happen, I suppose, is obviously at the higher kind of level, there's somewhat level of consistency and freedom to continue kind of, you know, training. Obviously at the moment it's a bit kind of kibosh, but up until recently it would have been consistent, would have been available, and the same it will be available at probably relatively early once the championship kind of, or the league kind of kicks in and stuff like that, you know. What's your kind of thoughts on how people can approach that? Is it back to the 5Ks to feck?
Yeah, the 5Ks. Yeah. Well, I suppose, again, look, this is
not the end of the world.
No, and this is the thing, like, you know, so I was thinking about this during the week. I was looking at Twitter, and I remember I seen some guy comment on something, and basically he was completely dismissing everything research in terms of sports science. They haven't got a clue, you know, it's this, it's that, and the other. And then 2 days later, he's retweeting a research paper on something that ties in with his own kind of beliefs, like, you know. So look, certainly 5Ks as a blanket, okay, mightn't be the best kind of use of time, but, and I'm sure you probably know a few lads yourself, Padraig, that would probably benefit from being able to do a couple of decent kind of 5K runs, like. So I think, look, the biggest, I know with the first lockdown, we actually knocked all training on the head for about 4 or 5 weeks. not too long into it. So I think we gave the players a 4 or 5 week program because we thought things would be back up and running kind of soon enough. And then I think lockdown got extended. I think we gave them another kind of 4 week program. And then we had a chat with the players and we found out that they had zero interest in training. They just weren't motivated. They weren't, you know, whatever I was telling them to do, some of them weren't doing it at all. So we decided as a, you know, kind of management group, like the manager had the idea, do you know what, let's just leave them off. There's no end in sight at the moment. So let's leave them off for 4 or 5 weeks. Let them, you know, I suppose kind of spend time with their families. They'd know what their choice, but let's not be putting an extra pressure on them when, you know, some of them are probably, you know, kind of out of work and, you know, maybe worried about kind of family members getting sick, or they're worried about, are they going to be able to kind of finish their college exams and assignments and everything else. Like, you know, so we just left them off completely for a couple of weeks and then kind of slowly tried to kind of bring them back in. So the big trend, I suppose, this lockdown is speed, isn't it? Everybody's doing speed.
Mad for speed. And I'm like, I don't know. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, it's fucking mad icy out and the whole lot. Like, lads, I don't know where you're pulling all this great Instagram content out of, but fair dues.
And I'm kind of thinking about, well, you know, will I start adding in a bit more kind of max velocity type stuff? And then I'm thinking, well, they're either going to be doing it on feckin' ice, or if it's not icy, they're going to be running through a bit of a bog somewhere, like, you know, so do they need to do that? So now I think during the first lockdown, I think people probably got a great benefit from doing speed because it was during the summer, harder ground and everything else. And of course, speed in that team setting is something that you want to know something that we get wrong. We're still getting speed wrong in our team stuff, like, you know, so.
That's a big one.
Yeah. So look, there probably was great kind of benefit to doing the speed stuff during the summer because for teams, we never really get to target it properly. So now all of a sudden we had 5, 6, 8 weeks where the lads could do a full sprint session. They could do their full warm up, all their technical stuff. They could go through their kind of, you know, build through the phases from acceleration up to max velocity and stuff. Now, maybe we can have a bigger emphasis in our kind of programs. We can still probably afford to dedicate a day to it and have more benefit than what we would kind of normally for this time of year.
Yeah.
But I suppose, like, we also need to be kind of thinking ahead in terms of, well, if these guys do come back in March, are they going to be able to tolerate now what's probably going to be quite a crammed 4 week kind of period before they're then playing probably 5, 6 games over 7 weeks. You know, so you have to kind of keep that in mind as well. So I suppose at the moment, like, I think it's trying to give people a little bit of a mix of everything. Can you develop the qualities that, you know, maybe some of your players are a little bit kind of behind on, but also can you keep one eye on where you're going to be in kind of 7 or 8 weeks so that you don't find that your players come back really, really fast, but now they mightn't be able to meet the demands of the of kind of not so much kind of training, because hopefully we can slowly build that back up. But obviously I know, and like, you know yourself now, when inter-county teams get back training, there's going to be challenge matches left, right, and center. So and that's going to be a big shock to the system. Like, so look, it's great if we have our players that little bit kind of faster and all the rest of it, but just make sure, I suppose, that they're robust enough, they're doing all the maybe the more boring stuff, the kind of prehab stuff, and they're getting a little bit of kind of exposure to some of those bigger volumes, not massive volumes, but look, we want to keep all aspects kind of tipping away. But
and so I suppose I'm going to go a little bit different of a touch on that now. So you've worked with a few different again, like, either inter-county teams or club teams and the whole lot. How much of a difference have you seen in the type of management over the last few years? Has there been much more of an acceptance of S&C as just another, like, an important part? Or has there still been kind of clashes? And will we see clashes for quite a while to come?
Yeah, look, there's always going to be clashes. I think that's normal enough. I think...
They're warming to it, though.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a lot more
Look, awareness.
Managers, yeah, awareness, and they're a lot more kind of receptive to it. There is probably still an element of maybe managers that feel they have to be receptive to it because everybody else is doing it, and they might necessarily have a huge kind of faith in your in what you're doing yourself, like you know. So they might it might be a little bit of a, I think maybe in the club setup it might be a little bit more of a tick the box type thing. But look, that's changing. Look, people are getting a lot more kind of used to it. And like, yeah, like the managers, management kind of style. I suppose, look, I've been kind of limited enough really in terms of kind of inter-county kind of experience, like over, well, has look a few years, like, but yeah, there are definitely different kind of styles. I think there is definitely a more, I think a more of a kind of calmer, more measured response now from kind of managers. It's not the ranting and raving and hand in the heart and do it for the parish and the county and all this sort of stuff, like, which look still goes on, and maybe in small doses there's kind of need for that, like, but certainly I think kind of managers now and coaches are becoming that a little bit kind of more refined in terms of how they give their feedback, and they're, you know, they're trying to give a few little kind of snippets of information. They're trying to kind of impart it in a good manner. And look, I'll mention kind of Mick Fenley, so awfully senior hurling manager. Obviously he's won a gazillion All-Irelands himself as a club player and inter-county player, but definitely I kind of like his approach with the players in terms of it's very measured. He'll give them time to kind of digest what's happened themselves at halftime. He'll give them their couple of minutes. He'll come in, he'll give a couple of little kind of bullet points in terms of where the players need to improve, and then he's going to draw the players in as well and ask them for their feedback and get them to work in their own little kind of pods in terms of, okay, well, we need to work on doing this a little bit better, and can we improve on this, can we change this, how are we going to link in with the midfielders, the half forwards and all the rest of it, like, you know. So whereas maybe kind of traditionally it would have been, you know, I maybe somewhat kind of generic in terms of what you would have seen kind of given to kind of players at halftime, like, you know. So there is definitely a move towards getting a lot more involvement from the players and saying, oh, being a bit more of a collective, I suppose, and saying, look, you know, how can we make this better? Ultimately, the manager has to say, this is what I want to do. But I think definitely the there seems to be a bit more kind of a measured response or a more kind of considered approach really to giving that feedback.
And I think that's one of the biggest ones is there's obviously a considerable amount more education in the actual players, or at least an awareness of be it the value of an S&C because they may have been injured at some point, or they've at least been told, or they know somebody who's been injured and has been helped by either the S&C or by, like you mentioned, that measured CAM approach to rehabilitation or return to play as it is. I do think that's going to make a big difference because you see some of the most high profile managers or teams having that very calm, quite nearly tactical approach to it, and making it much more of an interesting, I suppose, from our perspective as coaches and SC coaches, and both like and lovers of the respective games, it's very interesting to kind of see, you know. I remember distinctly going to I think there was one of the coaching seminar conferences early last year, and we're looking at Brian Cullen's presentation about the numbers that he was getting the lads to hit in Dublin and so on like that, and then you kind of go, these are quite basic numbers and straightforward, you know, and then you kind of go, and then you go down the whole other road of like, well, okay, well, they're just unbelievably tactically aware and astute as well, you know what I mean? So they have the balance of being, it's like it there's not there's, the recipe to get there isn't the ingredients are always the same for all teams. It's just a case of like you're either really good at baking or you're pretty crappy at it. Like, you know what I mean? And you have a certain way of kind of working because we all have access or relative access to similar types of things. We'll have pitches, we'll have players, we'll have da da da. It's just having the savvy to kind of go, okay, well, what's the actual setting the stall out of like, okay, what kind of a football do we want to play or brand of that particular sport? And even the way you deal with we'll say with one of your athletes, Ellen, the approach of like it might look sometimes like she's doing loads and loads of Olympic lifts when she's actually just doing lots of other normal strength stuff, but it's just a really nice tie-in at the back end, or else it helps with her explosiveness. It helps with a little bit of power work for her. It helps keep her interested and engaged and empowered, which feeds into the other different pieces. So it's more just like that. There's lots of ways of building that interest into it, but we just have to kind of find the right ones for the right people.
Yeah. And like that's, as you're kind of talking there, I was kind of thinking about, I suppose, the impact that we can have as coaches. The you know, it's a bit of a kind of cliche, but certainly the better the relationship you have with the player, it just opens up that line of kind of communication. Like, and I suppose people, I can certainly give instances of being involved in teams and in year one, finding it very, very kind of difficult to get anything back from the players. And then eventually, you know, I suppose that kind of trust kind of develops, and, you know, maybe I think players think because you're an S&C coach that you're, you know, this has to be done this way, this way, this way. It's my way or the highway. But, and then if we have a little bit of interaction with the player, we might kind of figure out that, well, okay, you know what? Yeah, that doesn't really kind of suit you. Or, okay, you're not happy doing that. Let's kind of tweak that a little bit. You know, the more information that you give me about how you're finding this whole program, even this movement, the whole thing, what you feel you need more as a player. Okay, can I give that back to you? And look, the Olympic lifting with Ellen is a good example. I had no intention of adding in Olympic lifting to her program. And she comes up to me one day and she says, I seen this girl on Instagram, and I was like, oh, here we go. What's this going to be? And it was like a single arm amputee doing a clean. And she was like, I want to try it. And I was like, oh, geez. I said, I don't know if we'd be able to do that. Like, you know, she goes, oh, I really want to give it a go. And I said, we'll give it a go we do 5 minutes now every Tuesday and Thursday for the next kind of 6 weeks, see how we got on. And I think I put up that video, the video's on Instagram, and I put it into that WhatsApp group. And like the first day was absolutely all over the place, and we're having a great laugh. And I was looking at going, oh, this isn't going to happen. But look, we stuck at it. She got better. The key thing is, look, she enjoys it. We're probably getting some power benefits from it. We have a little bit of data to indicate that it is giving us something. And even kind of psychologically, like she said to me maybe a couple of months ago, I really find that it reminds me of my breaststroke, the coordination of the arms and the legs. And that was something that I'd never kind of thought about. But she has made this association between what she does in the pool to this exercise in the gym. She feels there's a little bit of tie-in to the coordination, the bracing, applying power and all this sort of stuff. So I'm there going, well, okay, we're overloading the athlete. She's improving her power generating capabilities. She's enjoying it. So happy days. That's the key thing. Can we get that? Look, I suppose, if we have a happy athlete, if the athlete likes what they're doing, well and good. Like, you know, so let's take advantage of that. And like you said, like so many more players now are so much more aware of kind of S&C and maybe what should be done. Sometimes that can be a little bit of a double-edged sword, because maybe they're looking at you know, somebody else's program that mightn't be kind of suitable to them. So like, have you got a really fast kind of explosive player who mightn't have the best kind of running technique, and he wants to follow somebody else? You know, he might have seen some other midfielders kind of running program that has seriously high mileage in it and is box to box and all the rest of it. And you might be trying to say to him, well, I don't know if this approach is the best one for you. But certainly in players, like, the awareness has gone through the roof, like, you know. And I notice now that GAA players in particular that have had exposure to kind of development squads, and look, development squads can get a little bit of kind of flack at times, but I think if done properly, they can be really beneficial. But we see guys coming through the development squad now, and they're, look, yes, they're stronger, they're fitter, but also their movement competency is a hell of a lot better. They're probably a good bit more injury resilient. Obviously, they have a higher platform than maybe those generations that went before them. But they also have that kind of greater awareness about their, you know, everything that they would have covered in the development squads, from the value of maybe a proper warm-up, the importance of doing speed work and doing it properly, to good technique when they're lifting, which maybe kind of something that we we either kind of take for granted or presume that people know how to do and stuff, like, you know. So but look, yeah, the level of player awareness now in S&C, and even like now in GPS, like we see GPS going into clubs, yeah. And you know, now that can be a minefield in itself, of course, but like I suppose it does open that conversation to the player in terms of, well, what does this number mean? Why are we looking at it? Is it something I need to improve on, or do I need to not worry about it?
Yeah, and I think that's what there's about five more questions I had there. I don't know if we have time for all of that today, because you've got stuff to do. I'm very aware. So I think we might have to talk about this another time again, but I will dig in for a little bit longer, if that's okay, Kieran. So there's a couple of things straight away there. Obviously, we talk about the skill acquisition piece for all of these types of athletes. But like you mentioned there, it's very much based on is it principle based, and is it appropriate? So like, is there actual overload in there? Is it just a case of flinging something in for the sake of it and not really noticing, okay, well, is it actual overload? Is it actual, you know, reversibility or whatever it is? Why are we putting it in there, and what's the appropriate reaction we want to get from it? You know what I mean? It's a,
yeah,
like you mentioned there about Ellen, for example, like if she psychologically feels more coordinated and more comfortable with it, and there's a little bit of data to back it up, then it's a good one. Yeah. whether it needs to be expanded on to go bananas, like I think that's where you've always really seen the same. And this is where I'm going to go off in a bit of another tangent now, but with the whole Olympic lifting type of a thing, like there's loads of ways we can do this. And I've tried to teach normal people in the CrossFit world and all this, yeah, kind of crack, yeah, the same. And I've had great success in parts with being able to teach people that, but it takes patience. It takes a nice bit of time.
Yeah.
It takes,
yeah,
a nice bit of organization. And it takes an awful lot of buy-in to get good at that kind of stuff. And it takes a very base awareness of like, okay, well, you still have to add a bit more weight every so often.
Yeah.
These are all very basic exercise principles. It's not a case of like, well, I'm just flinging in 30 or 40 in a row. Like that's, yeah, for the particular sport, if you want to go to the games, yeah, this is all fine and well. But it's like, it's the context is very important, I think, for all types of sports, whether it's in the normal kind of gym or else, especially with the likes of GA players or swimmers or Paralympic athletes. The main thing really is we talk about the lecturing kind of piece now, is this where the real good stuff is? Is the actual education of the coaches to try and help all of those holistically, I suppose, aware athletes at the moment? And what's your experience been of that that educational point of view? You've been in a kind of a few different interesting roles in that context.
In terms of kind of the lecturing, look, I suppose I did it full time for I think maybe either three or 4 years down in LIT. And look, before that, I was doing like part time stuff, an odd kind of weekend workshop with Satanta, and I'm still involved with them. But obviously lecturing kind of full time. And again, look, the whole kind of education sector and all the rest of it always gets a little bit of bashing, like, you know. So it's look. S&C education always gets a little bit of kind of flack, but like I think we're always trying to give kind of students, like you said, the basics. Have they got an understanding of the basics before they go out into wherever it is that they're going to kind of end up working with? Do we always prepare them as good as they could be? Well, look, kind of maybe not, but we, you know, when you're working in colleges, if you're working in an S&C kind of course or degree, you're probably trying to give people loads of different skills that will, yeah, make them kind of transition into different areas. Now I don't know if that's your question or where we're
that's actually exactly it, I suppose, is the our and not to necessarily say like whether that those types of courses or anything like that, because I've seen a lot of them have been involved in things like that, whether they're tooling the coaches correctly or not, that's a whole other kind of a conversation realistically, because you could say that about every single college course there is, you know what I mean? Yeah. Whether they're tooling a particular person correctly for their pursuit for potential job. But I think it's more that, do you see a positive trend when it comes to coach education in either the NGBs, or is the whole college system with regarding S&C and masters and all this kind of stuff, is that improving a huge amount in being able to help, I suppose, produce better quality coaches, or how do we work that? Is there a better way of doing it, either through the colleges or through nearly individual NGBs? What are you thinking? That's a controversial one, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. It is. But look, I won't mind that. I think I remember putting up a tweet years ago after I did a level one coaching course for a sport that I really enjoyed. Low battery warning. I better plug it in. I really enjoyed the course, and I remember there was one or two people on the course, and they got their level one, and Jesus, Patrick, they hadn't a clue, like, you know. Yeah. And I remember even the guy that was assessing them, we were doing a little bit of an assessment, and there was a guy, and he was getting everything kind of mixed up, and I just looked over at the assessor, and the assessor gave me a kind of a look as if to say, well, you know, yeah, what can I do? So in terms of your level ones, they're always a little bit,
yes,
kind of generic, and everybody, like, I don't think anyone in Ireland has ever failed a level one coaching course. So I've seen other kind of coaches, particularly from athletics backgrounds, like there's a couple of guys like Shane McCormack, like I see a level three IAAF athletics coach or something like that. I've only ever spoken to him very, very kind of briefly, but certainly from looking at all the stuff that he does, seems to have a really, really kind of in-depth knowledge on S&C and kind of performance science and monitoring and the whole shebang. So we can definitely kind of improve the delivery in that. So and I think IRFU probably do a good job of that. They have their CCC or whatever, like, which is a really, really good kind of conditioning course and would give people a really good grounding for working in their clubs. The third level sector can be very hit and miss. I always say, like, you know, a coaching qualification won't make you a good coach.
No.
From the college's perspective, they're trying to hedge their bets a little bit as well in terms of the amount of modules that they have. Can we give you a little bit of something on video analysis in case you want to go that direction? Yeah. Even though we're S&C, can we give you something, a little bit different? Because ultimately a college, I suppose, is trying to prepare people to get a job in any area. Can you get a job? Can you read a statistic that says, yes, we've got so many people in employment or whatever? I would definitely say there's a few kind of masters and stuff in S&C and related fields out there that probably aren't up to scratch, but that's also maybe as a result of, I know I was involved in the MSc in strength and conditioning when they had it down in LIT, and we would have got people from all different levels coming in, and like some of them are really ready and absolutely real high academic standard, high coaching standard, and are probably ready for a whole more level of detail than maybe some people coming in. So you could have somebody coming in from a generic health and fitness type degree, and now they're doing a master's in strength and conditioning, but sometimes their strength and conditioning background or experience might be very kind of weak or hasn't been really kind of developed. So you're trying to give them, I suppose, a degree level education in a master's kind of setup, if that kind of makes sense. And then look, of course, the people always assume that when you have your degree in something that you're, you know, you're up to speed and you're up to scratch with it. Like, you know, but I think I remember having this conversation with another kind of coach or a lecturer who was being very kind of critical about these kind of students, like, you know, and they were only like kind of 19, 20, like, and he was like being, oh, well, they can't do this and they can't do that and they can't do the other thing. And I'm like, well, they're 19 and they're 20. Yeah. Like, you know, when you're in third level, your third level is almost a secondary aspect to being in third level. Yeah. Like, it's more the social life and the interaction and everything else. So sometimes we kind of forget. And over time, I've seen a few guys that have maybe wouldn't necessarily be standout kind of coaches when they finish a degree or whatever, but they go out, they get involved in the industry, they immerse themselves, they kind of upskill. And the most important thing is they spend time coaching people and they get a hell of a lot better at it. And they become really, really, really good good coaches. So I think maybe one of the biggest kind of drawbacks with colleges now is that there is not enough actual coaching.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can try and give them kind of work experience, and then sometimes that can become very kind of tick the box, and you don't necessarily know how much they're,
yeah,
how much they're doing. I think in the future, would it be possible to have a bit more of a, not an internship, what's the word? Almost a bit more like an apprenticeship
yeah,
type thing.
Exactly.
Like, but will people go for it? I don't know. I think it would probably be a way more beneficial if you had a 4-year degree and the last year of it was 90%. You've got to go and do all of your hours and actually get properly appraised on your coaching feedback.
Like,
so it's very hard to assess somebody coaching in a college setup. Like I've tried to do it myself, and then because you've got to provide the marking criteria, well, it's very easy to rehearse and learn and just go in for. So as an example, I remember having to I decided to run an agility plyometric practical, and I think I might have had 65, 70 students, and you're trying to give them 10 minutes each, and it ends up you don't have that time to do it.
Like.
So
it,
you know, the assignments, you know, the practical assessment ended up going over kind of 2 weeks or whatever. Like, so realistically, sometimes a practical assessment in a college like that might get cut down to 5 or 6 minutes per person. So what can you deduce from that?
Like,
so we do need to look at kind of making it better. We do need to look at getting people that are working in the industry to maybe come in and deliver a module or a couple of workshops or something like that. But that takes time and effort from those kind of people as well. Like, so I think lots of S&C coaches would benefit from having their college courses, having their students go work with a personal trainer or go work in a CrossFit gym for 6 or 8 weeks, coach, but they also need to have their coaching actually appraised by somebody as well, which I don't think we do.
No.
And even ourselves, I mean, I remember I've tried to get students to do this in the past in terms of kind of video themselves coaching, set the camera up in the corner of the room and put on your mic or whatever. And no, look, the first 5 or 10 minutes you'll realize will be really fabricated. And then eventually you forget about it. And then, but like, I remember watching myself coaching back once not that long ago, and I was like, Jesus, do you know what?
I look like the
crankiest bastard in the room.
And
all the things that I say and the mannerisms, and like I have an awful habit of standing there folding my arms, and I look like the bold, you know,
the bouncer in the corner or something.
And I remember kind of looking at it going, well, you know, if I was assessing this student,
saying
his body language is not very receptive to developing the relationship with the athlete or whatever, like, you know. So like the coaching thing is hard, and like we definitely don't have enough coaching mentors. And I was thinking there the other night of kind of like Jed McNamara has been, like, he's become the new head of S&C in Munster Rugby.
And I know Jer from back in the day in Tralee and all that. Back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Years ago.
I was a Tralee bucko.
I was in a similar boat. I didn't actually last that long, though. I had similar issues to yourself. I don't know exactly the same, but similar issues.
Oh, God, yeah. But I remember Jed did he was in the first intake of that master's that we did in LIT, and I don't think it's running anymore. But and Jed will say himself, like, academically, he wouldn't be great at writing academic kind of assignments or this, that, and the other. But I remember we like doing a little coaching practical in one of the first weeks, and you'd look at Jed and you go, oh, this guy's a coach.
Flyer.
And athletes are going to love this guy. Like, he just had that energy. He had the vibe and he, like, a lovely personable manner about him. And you just knew look, this guy. Yeah, I remember looking at him straight away going, oh, yeah, look, this guy is a coach. You could tell he had his own business. He'd been coaching people, you know, and it's like you almost feel like saying to other guys, well, do you know what? Just look at how he does. Look at how he chats to people. Listen, how he kind of presents himself and carries himself off and does all that sort of stuff. And look, he understood the principles as well. He knew what to what to do, what to say, what to try. He had that experience of working with people, which I think is priceless. Like, you know, and it's great to see that he's now he went the hard way as well. I think he ended up, I think he had his own business in kind of Limerick or Clare, and I think he ended up packing that in, and he took a gamble and he went to Georgia on an internship for a year, working for bread and water basically, and end up getting a few other kind of roles from that, like, so along the scenic route for Jed. But
I think but you're dead right. There's a load of things in there. Like straight away, the whole apprenticeship mentality, I think it's I can only see that actually becoming more and more interesting in lots of ways, like you mentioned, even with the whole CrossFit kind of a vibe. Like I know for a fact that I've looked at for a number of years and at intern type structures and like being a mentor for such and such new coaches. Yeah. Like I've been involved in CrossFit since 2008, but also having done lots of other things before that, I think I would have a certain awareness of exactly what the crack is. But anytime I program for any of the, either my own, like normal people that I would work with or any of the gym, it very much goes back to, okay, well, I could do crazy CrossFit or I could do CrossFit S&C, which I like to call it, you know what I mean? And essentially it all comes back to like, okay, well, we're still trying to overload. We're still trying to keep the base principles going because it's still just, these are the type, like people as organisms are still the same thing. Like we're not just some new kind of thing because they're doing this new, like, it's not like I'm not teaching, if I'm teaching a spinning class, I'm not teaching a cycling class. I'm teaching an energy system class. So it needs to look a certain way. And it also needs to be an energetic, fun kind of vibes. But when it comes back to the, especially when it comes to the colleges, I think there is, you're definitely dead right. There can be sometimes too much of a challenge when it comes towards research papers, or at least trying to build this kind of a mentality towards that. But the most important thing, you think you're right, is that the exposure to the coaching, be it either through like those NGBs, you know what I mean, like you said, IRFU or whatever it is, especially even the likes of Tanta, like any of those even kind of workshops, like happened to all of us, you get exposed to these new interesting coaches and you're like, okay, well, that changes my whole mentality to what's potentially available and what's possible and the types of things, even the type of approach. I talk about one small thing. When I was doing the FAI youth cert years ago, we had Park Nicholson and we had Noel O'Reilly on the course back in the day. And at one stage, like this Brian Kerr's assistant, the ball lad and stuff. And people like him, you're kind of like, Jesus, he's like this. I suppose the hour or two I spent with him and playing five-a-side as well with him, like that makes more of a difference than anything else to me. You know what I mean? Because even just the way he was approaching it, the detail he was going into and all this kind of stuff, and you'd learn more from him than you would in two or three feckin' weeks with other stuff, you know? And you're correct in it that there's a lot of other coaches there that you could go and watch them and you'd be like, Jesus, I just picked up more than fucking I thought I did for a month worth of stuff. You know, there's a lot of detail in there, but we'll kind of change tact a little bit before we leave it to it. So what's your kind of main recommendations for people at the moment who are kind of maybe struggling going through the whole pandemic kind of a vibe and are kind of a bit unsure of how to approach their training? Obviously they might have some programs and stuff like that, but we'll talk about club player. Is it a case of just kind of keeping everything kind of balanced and just tipping along nicely and trying to regain the motivation? Or is it just a case of practice of finding their own specific issues that they need to address and kind of just digging into them while you have a bit of time?
Yeah, I suppose I think if they're struggling for motivation, I think maybe, you know, I suppose kind of do less maybe kind of initially, which may seem a little bit kind of counterproductive. But look, if you're struggling kind of motivation wise, you probably don't want to be trying to get yourself to do two gym sessions and three running sessions a week or whatever. So maybe can you drop back and do the bare minimum, do the basics. I think, like you said, like it might be the most kind of exciting or the most kind of scientific, but like certainly can we cover a little bit of kind of all bases, or maybe, you know, even if you did, like, well, this week I'm going to have a little bit more focus on my speed. Next week I'm going to do a bit more kind of high speed running. Maybe the week after that, everything I do is going to be with the ball, with the hurley, with the stick, whatever it is. And, you know, there's going to be no, you know, I'm going to run, I'm going to jink, I'm going to shoot, I'm going to, you know, do all different kind of bits and pieces. And then I suppose the most obvious thing for me maybe would be, do you have a glaring kind of weakness? Like, do you have what is your kind of weak issue? Are you the player that traditionally has all these little niggles in the same area? Chances are you probably know what sort of rehab stuff you should be doing. Maybe you don't do it as diligently as you would like to during the main kind of the main season. Is that something now that you can kind of focus in on? And I suppose maybe find something, is there some little aspect that you do enjoy and make sure that that's a constant in your in your program. So and maybe that might be the same for kind of coaches as well. Do they know that, well, I know that Padraig loves this little, you know, shoulder warm up, or he loves this little drill with the ball or whatever it is, like, you know, so kind of make sure that he gets plenty of that and try and kind of, we certainly want to kind of improve if there is a key area that we think, okay, we really need to make better. Is this a good window now to close the gap on whatever kind of deficit it is that we have?
I think that's one of the hard parts though as well sometimes, because it will take that coaching new to kind of understand, okay, well, I actually have to, God forbid, nearly individualize a tiny bit, but it very much is a good time to touch base with those individual athletes and going, okay, right, like, what's the story here? You know, we have some time. You're not in a rush to get such and such done in the next 2 weeks or something like that. And you're not trying to keep exactly on the program because there's a lot of pliability with it. And that's where you're dead right. It's very much even like going back to game analysis and going, okay, do you know what? Actually, we'll watch some of these previous games and going, okay, there is actually, I found a few bits and pieces here now that we might have overlooked previously, or getting the players to have a look at some other games that they can kind of pick up different things. So it's, I suppose it's kind of interesting stuff like that getting them a little bit more aware of some of the interesting questions they might need to ask, or they should be asking of us as coaches.
Yeah. And I think like there's probably plenty of avenue now to maybe even improve and maybe I suppose kind of players' body position or kind of foot position when they're turning, like, and you know, that, I suppose that could be done off you know, I'd probably be given out to now for encouraging a closed skill or whatever, like, but I know a few people that will struggle turning, you know, that 180 degrees when they're, you know, so they're facing forward and all of a sudden they have to turn and go backwards, like, you know, so, well, you know, hop the ball off the wall behind you and go and turn after, and you know, maybe for that player it's working on getting that little bit lower, turning the hips and the shoulders, looking in the direction of travel and staying nice and low off the first one or two steps or whatever it is, or even just something as basic as being, okay, get used to being in a good kind of athletic ready position as much as you can, and then work on kind of transitioning out of different kind of positions. So is there a weakness there that we can get better at? Maybe for some coaches, now is a good chance to ask the player. Like I had a kind of a running and gym program up and going there recently. And I just kind of said, look, if anyone hasn't done the previous kind of 4 week block like they were supposed to, can you let me know? And, you know, one guy gets on to me and says, well, actually I haven't done anything since, you know, the 20th of December or whatever. So, so there's a good example that, okay, well, if he continues on with the program that we have, he's going to run into difficulty. So, okay, well, basically it's like, well, what can you give me? He goes, oh, well, I can really only give you 2 days a week at the moment. It's like, okay, well, let's work on this over the next 4 weeks, 2 days a week. We'll slowly kind of build it up and see how we get on. So,
cool.
It is tricky for everyone at the moment. Yeah. I think.
But I think you're right. It's a good thing to put a little bit of a framework in over the, we'd say like a 2 to 3 week, like we know we're in a kind of a lockdown till we'll say the end of February. So you have like 3 to 4 weeks where you go, all right, well, look, I will spend a bit of time on speed this week, I'll spend a bit of time on high speed running the following week, and then amongst that I'll have like a couple of the other day, 2 or 3 days or whatever it is, I'll have a little bit of ball work where it's like, right, I identify what the issues might be. The next couple of weeks I'm going, okay, well, I'm digging in quite hard, then I might retest how is my positions, my reactions. And like you said, videoing yourself is one of the big things I think that an awful lot more athletes should do on an individual basis nearly, because it gives it just a good awareness, like we mentioned there about coaching. Like when we're videoing ourselves and we can see ourselves with our mannerisms and our voice projection and stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's unbelievably valuable. It changes the whole mentality to it. And I think it obviously makes us nervous, but it also,
yeah,
it definitely makes a good amount of humility where you go, oh, okay, well, I'm not necessarily doing all of this wrong. I'm just, maybe need to lower my volume a bit or whatever it is, you know.
It's just a smile less hands. Every now and again.
Exactly. But I think that's a good recommendation to give that kind of structure to it. Now, I'm going to leave you to it, Ciarán, after this. Who is your favorite coaches at the moment?
Oh, God.
I know, a tough crowd. Sorry, bro.
Yeah, it's a hard question, isn't it? So I was trying to think about this now. I said, God.
Who's doing interesting work at the moment? Let's put it that way in your head.
I suppose there's
even a locally. Few.
I'm always kind of drawn to, I suppose, maybe kind of different opinions. I think are always good, or maybe not what's kind of conventional. So, like there's a guy on Twitter. Is it Matt Rea? Is that his name? He's like the head S&C of like Alabama football or whatever. Like, you know, so. So he always kind of puts up some kind of interesting stuff about, like, basically he doesn't do a whole pile of max strength work. It's more kind of speed based in the gym and explosive based and all the rest of it. Like, you know, so that's always a kind of an interesting kind of perspective or, you know, always good to kind of look at. The biggest kind of drawback at the moment, I think, is that we can't get access to other coaches. Like, so it would be great to go and look at other people kind of coach and see how they're
valuable.
And see how they do it and so on. So and I think like Alex Natera, like another really good guy to kind of follow on Twitter, good interesting kind of perspectives. There is a coach, he hasn't been online a whole pile recently now, George Petrakis. He used to be in UCD and then he went over to Glasgow Rugby, and I think he's down south in some kind of rugby club at the time being, but like it has a really interesting kind of website. So very spoke to him one or two times when he was over here in Ireland before he left, like in a real kind of deep thinker, and certainly ones that kind of challenges your point of view and makes you think about what you're doing and why you're doing it. Like, so he would be a really good guy. In terms of kind of locally, I suppose, you know, I suppose it goes hand in hand with the success that they've had over the last couple of years. But certainly someone like kind of Paul Kinnaird, you'd love to just kind of sit and watch one of his sessions for an hour or so and see how it's all kind of planning out. Like, so I definitely think the likes of him are really kind of progressing, kind of coaching and blending, bringing in that coaching and S&C side of it into the one setup. Like, so I don't think I've ever met Paul, but like he certainly seems like an interesting guy, and you'd love to
very much
to be a fly on the wall and see how the sessions are rolling and seeing what his kind of thought process is. Like, so I think that'd be it. Like,
it's a mad world. Like, but you're dead right. There's a few characters like that you could get a huge amount out of and an awful lot to chew on for a long time with just a little bit of access to them, and it just needs that bit of a spark to kind of bring you maybe thoughts in a little bit of a different direction. Like we mentioned, some of the guys you mentioned earlier on, Liam and Des and Kevin and Dave and the lads, like you can learn a huge amount from those guys still as it is, regardless of what kind of age you're at or experience level you're at coaching wise. Cause the one thing they will always do is bring it back to the kind of basics and going, okay, like regardless of what high level they would have worked at or they currently work at or whatever, there is very much a basics mentality and always a brilliant basics mentality, which I think is very important. And with potential for progression and kind of out of the box thinking every so often is very important.
Yeah. I think it's probably coaches it's very easy for us all to fall into the trap of maybe sticking to our protocols or this is what I'm doing or this is what worked the last time, so we're going to continue doing this and stuff. Like, so it's always good to have people maybe kind of challenge your thoughts and really kind of make you look at what you're doing and saying, well, could I actually do that better, or do I need to be doing this, is this giving me enough kind of benefit, or you know, or am I just kind of filling time doing 10 minutes of this when it's really just fluff, it's not adding anything to the athlete or the performer.
Exactly. Well, Ciarán, it's been amazing talking to you. I really appreciate you taking the time, man. Where could people get in touch with you if they want to pick your brain?
God. I suppose social media, so Twitter, it's at CGKyo, and it's the same on Instagram. I'm trying to avoid Twitter these days, Padraig, because
Heavy
there's
duty.
so, yeah, God.
I'm deleting it this week.
Oh man, it's so heavy, isn't it? There's no
Brutal,
joy in
eh?
it anymore.
No, I
But
like
to be fair,
I've got what I want out of it for a while, and I'm just deleting it for because I know the last time I deleted it, I deleted it maybe last year at some stage for a couple of months, maybe a month or so. And I have to say, I've never been happier. Jesus Christ.
it's a
It's just,
burden, isn't it? Like,
it's,
you know,
well,
so
it's more just, I think, because you go down
lots of
kind of rabbit
angry people
holes
there.
on it. Yeah, you go down rabbit holes, and like there's a lot of good stuff, but it just gets a bit wound up. Like it's just, I don't know. But anyway, sorry. Yeah, now it's done.
And Instagram, I suppose I'm on Instagram more. Instagram is a lot lighter, it's a lot happier, isn't it? Like, I like maybe it's a
It's a
sign
bit
of
more
maybe
airy.
it's a sign of yeah, it's a sign of my old age, but I like logging into Instagram and you see a lovely
Positivity
picture
is
of us.
good
Yeah,
at times.
you see a picture of a fox running across a lovely frozen field or something. I'm drinking my coffee going, ah, geez, that's lovely, isn't it? That's great. Like, and then you go onto Twitter and somebody's arguing about, you know,
Like
Olympic
a
lifts
force
or
velocity or
freaking,
something, you're like, oh
yeah,
God,
or
stop.
this muscle doesn't work in this direction. And oh, Jesus, it's like, okay, I'm logging out again.
Yeah,
But I
exactly.
do check in on Twitter, so
Yeah.
there is plenty of good. Look, there are good
Of
coaches on
course.
there, and you know,
Absolutely.
I suppose, look, that's another thing, you need to be selective about what you're how much time you're investing in these things, like, you know. So
Yeah, now is a good time to clear house if there was ever a time, you know what I mean?
oh, absolutely, absolutely.
But that's
But yeah.
fantastic, Ciarán. If anybody wants to get in touch with Ciarán, it'd be great to pick his brain. Appreciate you taking the time, Ciarán, and have a lovely day, man.
You too, Patrick.
Okay, folks, so you've just been listening to episode number 64 of the Performance Path Podcast with Ciarán Keogh. So, folks, first of all, I want to say a massive thank you to Ciarán for joining me on the show today. I'm sure you guys got as much as I did from that conversation. If you'd like to check out any of the previous podcast episodes, folks, you can check us out on our home base of podbean.com or on Spotify or iTunes or pretty much wherever else you get your podcast from. So, folks, I'm looking forward to bringing some really interesting guests on over the next while. So thanks again for all the continued support. Hope you guys have a great day, and I'll chat to you very soon.